In a world that appears to be filled with negativity and distrust, it's easy to feel helpless and frustrated. Well, how about a change? How about a podcast that brings positivity to your day with stories about everyday people doing good things for people around them? You found it here. This is the Harmony Goal Podcast with Tom Durth, focused on making the world a more harmonious and caring place. We hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to another episode of the Harmony Goal Podcast. Once again, the purpose of having this podcast is to shine a light on the people who are out there doing wonderful things for other people unselfishly. People are not looking for recognition. They're not looking for money. They're not looking for anything other than the warm heart feeling they have of helping other people and creating more harmony along the way. And today we're going to be talking about Ralston House. And Ralston House is an advocacy center for young children and teenagers who have been involved in, they've been victims of either physical or sexual abuse or have witnessed some horrible thing in their life that they need help with. And we're very pleased to have the executive director with us today. That is Mr. Don Mosley. So, Don, would you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with the Ralston House?
Sure, and thank you for having me on and letting me talk about Ralston House. I've been at Ralston House for a little over 16 years now and have worked with children who have been abused since the beginning of my career and have also worked with adults with serious mental illness. But came to Ralston House because of wanting to work with these type of kids and with law enforcement and social services to make sure these kids were interviewed in a way that was effective for them, but also helped those agencies, law enforcement and social services, find out the truth about what was going on with these kids.
Wow. So these kids faced with adult issues, not knowing where to go, what to do, or even their families not knowing how. You are the center to go to that people can get that collaboration between them and any officers or anything that is legal size.
Yeah. We're a nonprofit, but we're a little different in that the only people who can even refer to Ralston House are police, social services, and district attorney's offices. So once there's an outcry made that a child has possibly been sexually or physically abused or witnessed a violent crime, homicide, domestic violence, police then come to us, social services, prosecutors, and ask us to do the forensic interview, the medical exam, and provide victim advocacy for these families.
Wow, that is amazing. Thank God. I mean, it's hard to hear some of these stories, I'm sure. But thank God there are people like you out there who are giving that helping hand to somebody who would otherwise be totally lost and lost in the mire of the laws and the regulations and all that sort of thing. That's amazing. What are some of the programs that you actually have? What are some of the specific programs? I know you said you deal with things like sexual abuse and physical abuse, and if somebody's witnessed some sort of violence of some kind. What specifically do you do there?
So basically, what happens is when there's a report made to police or human services, they call us and we set up an interview time for these kids. And forensic interviews, these specialized interviews, are our main service we provide. So police, social services, and a prosecutor watch from another room. We have specially trained interviewers who interview these kids. It's all recorded onto a flash drive so that that child doesn't have to be re-interviewed time and time again. Investigators can watch that flash drive over and over. If it goes to court, then defense counsel gets a copy of it because we are a neutral party. We're not paid by police or social services. They just use our services. And our interviewers are trained to interview these kids in a way that, one, they're not re-traumatized. If we feel that child is being traumatized by the interview, we will end the interview, whether we've gotten information or not, because we're there for the kids, not for the professionals we work with necessarily. Two, we will do these interviews without any leading questions or putting ideas in the kid's head. It's one of the reasons we record these interviews so that when it goes to court, people can watch and see exactly how the questions were asked. I always say my staff, our forensic interviewers have a very tough job. They have to interview these kids and they don't get to start with, tell me what your coach did to you. Tell me what your uncle did. They start by saying, hi, I'm somebody who talks to kids. Let's talk about what you had for breakfast this morning. Mm-hmm. And somehow from that question, get these kids to talk about their worst days in great detail, sight, sound, smell, touch, taste, texture, because that's what investigators will use to investigate those kind of details they'll use to investigate this crime. I always joke that as executive director, if I make a mistake, I push the delete button and retype what I'm working on. If an interviewer asks a question incorrectly, they're going to have either prosecution or defense counsel asking them why they chose one word over another, what research they based their questions on. It is an incredibly exacting process to be able to do this and to get these kids to talk about them in such great detail and not traumatize them at the same time. And we were very successful at doing that. I can't think of the last time in my 16 years that we've had to end an interview because a kid was being re-traumatized. It just doesn't happen. So we do those forensic interviews. We do medical exams of kids, including pediatric sex assault exams. We are in our area, we're the only non-hospital setting that does that. Children's Hospital and Denver Health and Hospital also performs those exams. And we do those not to collect evidence, because we will find evidence in less than 10% of the cases. That child crimes aren't reported right away, so seldom do we find any evidence. We're going to do it to make sure that kid's physically okay. Our doctor's going to look in their ears, listen to their heart, and has a special machine that can take pictures of their genital area, but we're not going to be invasive or draw blood or go inside them or anything like that. But we can test for sexually transmitted diseases because people often don't think about testing a five-year-old for that. So we're going to, if there's reasons to suspect that, we're going to test them. Teens want to be tested because they're scared to death. They have some sexually transmitted disease, but they can't go to their doctor or even like a Planned Parenthood because those places say, who was your partner? And the last thing these kids want to do is talk about who their partner was. Mm-hmm. And so they worry, what do I have? And so our doctor is going to make sure they're completely physically okay. And often if their parents are their perpetrators, then they may not have been to a pediatrician to get normal health care, because pediatricians ask questions perpetrators don't want answered. Mm-hmm. And so these kids often get their vaccines through quick clinics or a sports physical through a quick clinic. And so we found everything from strep to worms to scoliosis that needed to be treated. And finally, our medicals help with these kids' mental health program. Kids and families often think they're broken from being sexually abused, and that's just not the truth. We have parents who say, will my daughter be able to have children? Will they be able to enjoy sex as they get older? Will it make them gay or straight? Will they be able to get married and go to college? And what our doctor can say is all those things can happen. Again, they're going to be able to have children. It's not going to make them gay or straight. They're going to be who they're going to be. They can go to college. They can get married and enjoy sex, all those kind of things, which can be very relieving for families and the children to know, because we have all these myths about that. Most kids who are sexually abused have no serious injuries. In fact, many times there's no, after a couple of months, you may not be able to tell any physical difference. So that's what we do with our medicals. We have victim advocates who work with the kids and the families while they're there, the parents while they're there. With the kids, we make sure those kids are relaxed before they go into the interview. We have playrooms and toys and snacks, and we get them relaxed. Then once they're done with the interview, we make sure they're doing okay, that they aren't re-traumatized and they're ready to go back out. Because often we can have a child come in the morning at 8:30 and tell us a horror story till 12 and then go back into school that afternoon. Because our victim advocates have made sure they're ready to go back. The other one of our victim advocates, while they're working with the kids, the other one is working with the parents. And when I say the parents, that's non-offending. If they were somebody we suspected, they wouldn't be in the building. But they're going to work with the non-offending parents over how to, what to expect, what the court process is going to be like, what they may hear at the end of this interview. And mainly, we're going to talk to them about how they and their child can heal if something has happened. We're going to try to get them referred to good therapists, talk about the value of therapy for both them, their child, and other family members, and help them set appointments. And then if they want, we will follow them through the whole process of their case, depending how much they want us involved with them. But those are really the three programs we do at Ralston House. We're a very narrow sort of focus and are at the beginning of these police investigations to make sure these kids get a chance to tell their story and get a chance to do it in a way that's not traumatic.
That is, what a blessing, you know, like with such an ugly, ugly, ugly situation that you're faced with, that the children are the most important part of this, not the information, not the law, not the this, not the that. But to make sure that they are comfortable enough to be able to tell their story, get that out of their system and be able to move on. That is beautiful. I am just absolutely thrilled that you people are there. I want to ask you a little bit about your advocates. Are most of the advocates you have, victim advocates, are they mostly employees? Are they contract people? How do you find the right people to deal with these children?
Well, all our the forensic interviews who do the interviews are all employees. Our victim advocates are both, we use both staff victim advocates, and we also use highly trained volunteer victim advocates. We are able to use volunteers who are willing to go through an extensive background check, including polygraph and very a long personal history questionnaire besides criminal background checks, and then extensive training to be able to come and help us, our paid victim advocates, with working with these families. Our doctor and nurse are both contract with us, and we contract with Denver Health and Hospitals to have one of their specialized nurses and doctors come over and see our kids.
That's wonderful. So your vetting process is really well thought through as to who's going to be able to help the most with these children and teens.
Yes, exactly. It's a very, very specialized skills in all these positions.
That's pretty amazing. I know one of the things I was really impressed with when I went to your website, and I encourage our listeners to go to your website, which is Ralston, R-A-L-S-T-O-N, house.org. And the number of your staff people talking about their area of specialty, the area of expertise. I mean, even the fact that you have multilingual people there to help, because obviously that's something that didn't come to my mind right away, but is certainly an important thing. They were talking about trauma, mental health. They're also talking about human trafficking and things like that that you just don't want to even open your eyes to the fact that that's happening to these young kids. Is there anything you'd like to share about that?
Well, yeah, I think that you're exactly right. Most of us don't want to think about it. And we don't have any idea the extent of it. Last year at Ralston House, we served Jefferson, Adams, Broomfield, and Gilpin counties, the 1st and 17th judicial districts. We saw 1,200 kids for interviews. 70% of those were sexual abuse. 15% were kids who have been severely physically abused or tortured. And 15% were kids who had witnessed homicides and severe domestic violence. We have the rates of sexual abuse within our community are people just don't understand how often it happens. And perpetrators will often say that's why they get away with it, that people don't think it happens very often. So when they see the signs, they don't pay attention. We know that from national surveys, one out of six girls before they reach the age of 18 will be sexually assaulted, and one out of 12 to 14 boys will be sexually assaulted before they reach the age of 16. Before they reach the age of 18, most of them will not tell. Ralston now sees the tip of the iceberg. Somehow we found out. The average age somebody tells about being sexually abused is 52 years old. If they were abused as a child, they wait. The average age is 52 because perpetrators purposely make these kids feel like it was their fault, that they did something wrong, that they were the cause of it. And when you believe it's your fault, it's something you don't want to talk about. It's why we don't do these interviews at police stations. We have four different sites and none of them are at a police station. We have one in North Glen, two in Lakewood, one in Arvada, and they're designed to be friendly, welcoming atmospheres, because the worst place you can often take a kid who's been sexually assaulted is a police station, because they think the police are going to arrest them because the adult hurting them has told them that. And so that's one of the reasons police come to us to do these, is one, we're expert interviewers, and two, our sites are friendly and kid welcoming.
How do you go about, with all this going on, how do you go about creating a safe zone for these kids?
Part of it is our sites themselves. I often say our buildings do have to work. They're kid-friendly buildings. When they come in, they're not buzzed in a door. We have a staff who goes out and greets them, ask them their name, ask them their parents' name, introduce themselves. We tour the whole facility. Then we get the kids to sit down and just play for a while. Even if the team is already ready to start the interview, we delay that so that our victim advocate has a chance to talk to the kids and the parents for a little bit. Then the parents go meet with police, social services, and our forensic interviewer, so they get a chance to understand what the process is going to be like. And during that time, our staff with younger kids are playing dolls or house or playing on a video game. With teens, they might be sitting and talking about what's the latest thing going on at school. But the message we're going to give over and over is you're not in trouble. We have lots of snacks and food, and we're going to take them out and let them pick out what they want to eat and have. And what kids tell us afterwards is, I was worried I was going to be in trouble. I was worried they're taking me to a police station. And then I came here. It was bright. It was cheery. There were toys. The woman who talked to me just talked, didn't ask me any, initially didn't ask me any questions or anything. And I got, junk food. Those are things that happen to kids when they're not in trouble. Mm-hmm. And so they quickly realize it. And what's interesting is parents often say the same thing. Parents often feel like I did something wrong because a coach hurt a kid or because a minister took advantage of their child. And we have to say, you're not a bad parent. You just got a bad coach. You just got a bad minister. You got a bad teacher. That doesn't mean you're a bad parent, but they say the atmosphere of themselves makes them less worried because they're like, I got a cup of coffee and a snack to eat. And they sat and talked to me, and it wasn't just in a police station. We've all seen these crime shows where, they go in and it's busy and there's police everywhere and they're banging and yelling at kids while they're at on a metal table. That's not our atmosphere. It is friendly and made to keep kids in a safe space. Our staff are also trained how to react to trauma and how to help kids regulate their own systems. So, I mean, some of our interview rooms have rocking chairs because rocking helps calm your system. Mm-hmm. And so if we see a kid who's really having a rough time, we may use the rocking chair for that kid so they can rock. And it is amazing to watch how that rocking slows and they get into a pattern because they're regulating their own bodies that way. So one of the things we have all the kids do a survey in the parents. And one of the comments we get the most is, I felt safe. And these are kids who are a lot of times coming from situations where they did not feel safe.
Wow. Wow. You have thought this through so well. When did Ralston House get started?
The original Ralston House was called the Arvada Child Advocacy Center, and it started in 1990, was started by the Arvada Police Department. And years later, 16 years ago, they hired me to expand it to all of Jefferson County and Gilpin. And then about 6 years ago, we expanded to Adams and Broomfield counties. But when we expanded out of Arvada, we changed the name to Ralston House to honor the founder who discovered gold there in Arvada, Ralston, John Ralston. So to honor our Arvada roots by calling it Ralston House, but not limited it to one city because all the cities wanted to take pride in who they were using for this. So it made it a lot easier. They didn't like bringing everything to Arvada.
Okay. I love it. Love it. One of the things you mentioned before was something about oftentimes people don't recognize the signs when there's a problem. What if you could give us very quickly two or three or the most important things that people to begin to watch for so they know that their ward, their child, their niece, nephew, whatever might be going through something.
Well, the number one thing that anyone will tell you is change. For kids, it's often a change in behavior. A kid who was very friendly and outgoing suddenly stops being friendly and outgoing. A kid who loved going to school now doesn't like going to school. You look for those changes in behavior. It may not mean they're being sexually abused, but it says something's going on. And often what we see with abuse is it is those changes in behaviors. A kid who is potty trained, who suddenly stops being potty trained. Again, it could be something else, but that's one of the signs. Mm-hmm. Often kids will try to give us hints and we don't hear the hints. So it can be little things like, I don't want to go to soccer. I don't want to go to church. I don't want to see Uncle Bob. Now, I have five kids, and at some point they all said, I don't want to go to church today, or I don't want to go to school. That's normal. But it often, as an adult, if we just take the time to say why, if they say, I'm tired, that's different. If they say, I'm afraid, then we have a whole different conversation. Mm-hmm. But often as adults, and I did this myself, we get busy and we don't take the time to say why. Mm-hmm. I don't like Uncle Bob. Why don't you like Uncle Bob? Well, he doesn't let me, run around the house and throw things. That's a good reason that we like you around, Uncle Bob. He keeps you safe. Or it can be, I don't like Uncle Bob. He hugs me too much. Oh, what do you mean by that? And then to start asking, talk more about that. We don't want to go and assume somebody's hurting a kid or anything, but it's just giving them a chance to listen. It's also, I tell parents, one of the best things you can do is prepare your kids before something happens. One, the best thing you can do to help kids is have a great relationship with your children. Because then even if they're hurt, people will tell you they will heal quicker. Mm-hmm. So as a parent, having a good relationship will always help you heal. But some of the things a parent can do is talk to your kids about what your family's rules are. One can be that we don't touch anybody's bathing suit areas and they don't touch our bathing suit areas. And if somebody does that, will you come tell me? so I can explain our rules. I'm not going to get mad or in trouble, get somebody in trouble, because kids, young kids especially, worry about trouble. But you start telling them what your rules are about hugging, touching, those kind of things, and who can and who has permission. And can a child tell somebody, I don't want to hug you? I told my kids, you don't have to hug any of our relatives, but you will come out and greet them and shake their hand and say hello. Now, hugging, you get to make those decisions. You can have them learn the words for their body. So if something goes on, they have a way to tell. When we don't tell kids what a penis or vagina or butt is, they have a hard, and we're calling them some odd name. They may be trying to tell somebody something, but they don't get the name. Uncle Joe touches my cookie. If that's what you're calling it, somebody else may hear, well, I don't care. Tell them not to eat your, you know, tell them not to bother your snacks. But the kid may be trying to say something else. A couple other things we recommend for parents is to tell your kids they can come to you and you'll listen. You can say, I don't care who this person is, how much I love them, how much I trust them, what a great coach I think they are. If they're doing something they're not supposed to or makes you uncomfortable, you come tell me and I'll listen to you first. Kids know how much they hear us talk. Oh, he's a great coach. I love that teacher that you have. And it makes it harder for them to tell sometimes. But if you've given them permission, and it will be somebody you know and trust, because you don't let your kids around people you think would hurt your kid. And so often people are like, oh, but we trusted him. And I said, of course, he worked to gain your trust. 45% of the people who hurt kids are family members. 50% or more are people who you trusted with your child. Teach them math. Show them how to play lacrosse. You know, tell them about God. I'm trusting you with my most valuable thing. And then you break that trust. But if we give our kids permission, and then also let them know you're strong enough to handle it. Many kids tell us in interviews, we'll say, did you tell your parents what was going on? They'll say, no. We'll say, can you tell us why? And a lot of them say, I didn't want to break my mom's heart. Because they're trying to protect their mom from being hurt. Wow. I didn't tell because my dad said he would go kill somebody if they ever hurt me. And if he kills somebody, he's going to go to prison. I don't want my dad to go to prison. Now, as dads, we often say that, don't meaning literally we're going to go kill the person, even if we may feel it. But we're talking about kids and they take that serious. So telling your kids, look, if something happens to you, I'm going to be strong enough to handle it. It's not going to break my heart. I'm not going to go crazy and kill somebody. I'm going to protect you. I'm going to make sure you're safe. But understand, I'm strong when it comes to you. I'm Superman when it comes to you. And I don't need to go do those things that are going to put our family in danger or anything else. I'm just going to worry about taking care of you. And those kind of messages to kids can often allow them to say something early.
This is absolutely invaluable information for parents, for anybody to realize, you know, that this young generation probably been around for a long time, these issues, but what you're doing is an amazing thing to help people. How in the world do you fund all this?
We're like every nonprofit. We're sort of out there asking for grants, and we do lots of we do events. We have lots of individual donors who help us. It's a little hard for us in that we're not well known, because people who go through our services don't want to talk about what happened. They don't want to talk about their sexual abuse and where they had to go. They don't want to talk about witnessing a parent or brother murdered by somebody else who was in the family, which is what we get a lot. So we're well known to police, social services, and DAs, but the public doesn't even understand most of the time this happens. So we are out trying to educate people about not only sexual abuse and how to prevent it, but also about that we exist. And like other nonprofits, we depend on the community for funding. And the kids we serve are the kids who live in your block.
Right. And so for those people out there listening to this podcast, I how could this not touch your heart? And if you want to help and you want to do something, you can go to Ralston. That's once again, R-A-L-S-T-O-N-H-O-U-S-E, Ralston House. And there's a place there where you can donate and help the cause here, because every single dollar goes to help some young child in some way, shape, or form. And that can be a profound effect on the individual, the family, the society, all that. So every dollar counts. And I just want everybody to go out there and make a donation to Ralston House right now. So just reach in and do something good for the world today. So,
well, Don,
I don't mean to
cut very kind off, of you,
but time-wise, I need to move along. But I can't begin to tell you how much I appreciate you taking the time to share this story with our listeners, because it's an important one, difficult one to listen to, but knowing full well that we can make a difference too by helping you, helping them.
Well, thank you very much for giving us the time. And for getting the word out about our agency and also how to help kids.
Yeah, absolutely. So RalstonHouse.org. So ladies and gentlemen out there listening, please make a donation to the Ralston House. The things they're doing for these young people, these teenagers that just don't have the wherewithal to fight the system, they're doing it for you. And that is just an amazing, wonderful thing. So tune in again next week for another story about somebody out there that is doing wonderful things in the world, helping other people unselfishly and making a positive, harmonious change in the world as we go along. And you can go to our website, which is theharmonygoal.com, and you can subscribe. Send us a message, let us know how we're doing here. And if you'd like to donate to that to keep us on the air, we'd be happy to take that donation also, because that every little dollar helps there also. So with that in mind, please tune in again next week, and we'll have another wonderful, warm story like Don Mosley's story of the RalstonHouse.org. Take care.
Thank you so much for listening to the Harmony Goal Podcast. To learn more ways in which people are creating harmony in the world, simply subscribe to this podcast. See our mission at theharmonygoal.com. And remember, we are all empowered to create more harmony in the world, one smile at a time.